Today on The Balanced Word, the intriguing story of Esther.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Glad to have you with us for The Balanced Word as our journey through the Bible and stories continues. We take you to Esther today, and you can't help but see the providence of God throughout this story. God is at work in the world, and also in and through our very own lives. But Pastor Dave not only notices God in the story, but he wants us to see what it says about people too. We see a series of critical choices and the reasons why they were made. It's really tied in beautifully to God's providence, and somewhat mysteriously. We join Pastor Dave Rolfe as he begins by setting the stage.
Well, let's turn in our Bibles now to the book of Esther. If you haven't been with us all along, all this year we are going through the Old Testament and just picking out key Bible stories in the Old Testament. It's a fun way to go through the Bible. Next year, Lord willing, we will do the same with the New Testament. The way God usually communicates with people is through telling stories. It's the way Jesus taught almost exclusively, and it's really what comprises the bulk of the Bible. We can learn valuable lessons when we enter into a relaying of a story of something that has happened. And so that's why this year we're doing it and really enjoying it. The story of Esther, it's kind of a tricky one because instead of extracting one story from Esther, I'm going to try to do the whole story because it all goes together. But it's a big, complicated story. It's a great story. It's one of the best stories in the Bible, no doubt. But it's 10 chapters long, so I'm not going to be reading it to you. If I did that, we wouldn't do anything else. But I'm going to walk through the story with you best I can to describe it. And then talk about what are some things that we learn from this. What does this have to do with us? What does this have to do with our lives? So setting the stage for this, this happened around the time, when Ezra had gone back to Jerusalem after the 70-year Babylonian captivity, Ezra went back to help rebuild the temple. And then we talked about the last couple of weeks. Nehemiah came back later, while Ezra was still there, but rebuilt the walls of Jerusalem. Well, during this time, there was the most powerful empire in the world was the Persian Empire. Remember, the Assyrians were the powerhouse. Then the Babylonians conquered them. And then the Medes and the Persians came in and conquered them. So at this time in our story, it's probably a little bit before Nehemiah went to rebuild the walls of the city and after Ezra had come to rebuild the walls of the temple. So the Persian Empire spread all the way from India, all the way across the lower part of Asia, North Africa, all across Europe. It was a huge empire. And the guy who we are introduced to in chapter 1, Ahasuerus, was the king of all that. So he was the king of the area where the Jews were, but he was the king of like almost everything else in the known world at the time. And so, but Ahasuerus historically is usually referred to as Xerxes, X-E-R-X-E-S. Xerxes was most likely the father of Artaxerxes. And if you remember from the book of Nehemiah, Artaxerxes is the guy Nehemiah worked for who ended up giving permission to go back and rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. So that's kind of where we're at historically. And that's the character we're looking at is this king Xerxes or Ahasuerus. Now in chapter 1, you get drawn into the story because here's this powerful guy and he throws a huge party and it lasts for 7 days. And all these people from different areas come and his purpose in the party was, let me show you what a party looks like. And so he's totally entertaining them and they're loving it and they're all just drinking. And by the last day, the seventh day, the king's pretty drunk. And so he's thinking, okay, what can I do to impress these people? Now, the way they would do parties, only men went to the party and the women had their own separate party. And, you know, the reasons are sort of obvious. Men get really stupid when they're drunk. And they get even stupider when they're drunk around women. And so they just go, let's just keep these parties separate. So, but he's thinking, oh, what can I do now to impress them? I've shown them all my riches. I've shown them how powerful I am. So he comes up with an idea. He goes, my queen, my favorite queen, he had a lot of wives, but my favorite queen, Vashti, she's gorgeous. I want them to see how gorgeous she is. And so he sent 7 eunuchs to get her from her party and said, have her come in here wearing her crown. Now, that doesn't seem like it would be that objectionable, except from Jewish history and commentaries on this, including the Targum, what he did was he said, have her come in here wearing only her crown, because I want them to see how beautiful she is. That was, even in their culture, a very degrading thing to do to her. So the message is sent to do that, and she just says, no, I'm not going to do it. Now, if women learn to say no to their husbands, it would disrupt the entire universe. So you can't tolerate it. I mean, this was early signs. I mean, and I, you know, God tried to warn us. Don't let them vote. It's just, look what happens. But in this case, I think you have to respect her sense of modesty. And the truth is, if she had come out like that, it would have disgraced him as much as her. So she was probably right. But they go, what are we going to do? And so he asks his advisors. He's drunk. He's like, well, man, my wife said no to me. That's never happened. And I don't want to kill her because she's really beautiful. And so the advisors said, you got a problem on your hands, buddy, because if our wives find out about this, see, our wives are at her party. And if our wives find out that you can say no to a man, what are we going to do? It will destroy the world. And so they were going, you better do something. So he says, okay, tell you what, we'll make it really known. Because she said no to me, she's still my wife, but she's just going to be another one of those girls in my harem, and I'm never calling for her again. We have had our last date. And so did that, and everybody's like, okay. But he said, I need another queen. So they made the suggestion, hey, why don't you have a beauty contest where all of the most beautiful young virgins in the kingdom come and get all dolled up, spend like a year really fixing them up in every way, and then they'll come in one at a time, each of them spending the night with you. They'll come in at night, and they will spend the night with the king, and in the morning, you can decide, is that the winner? So it's like Persian Bachelor. And so he's like, that works for me. So when we come to chapter 2, that's where this girl named Esther comes into play. Well, her Hebrew name was Hadassah, which means myrtle. So they're like, nah, we got to get you a better name than that. So sorry, Myrtle, if you're here. But we'll name her Esther, which was like a goddess of beauty. So she gets picked to come on Persian Bachelor. And it's like, yeah, they tell you, you're going on it. She was a gal, a Jewish gal, who had been basically raised by her older cousin. When her parents were killed, he adopted her and treated her like his own daughter, and he had raised her. So in our story, you know, they come and they go, you're beautiful, you're coming with us. And they go, okay. And he just tells her, Mordecai was her cousin, who said, just don't tell anybody you're Jewish. That's not always a good thing in the Persian kingdom. And so she doesn't. He's the typical Jewish guy that everybody knew he was Jewish, but he goes, don't tell them. So in chapter 2, she goes to the contest. And for a year, she's being prepared, made up, dolled up. I don't know what all they did to, you know, if they have a year to make you beautiful. But then it comes, and the whole time he's like hanging around outside, just, hey, have you heard anything about Esther? How's she doing? He's sort of watching her from a distance. And finally, her day came, and she had her night, her date with the king. And he's like, wow, I think we have a winner. And he proclaims her to be his queen, his number one, his favorite for now. A little later in the story, it said he was getting ready to do the contest again, so you know how it is. But at this point, she's the winner. Now, while that happened in chapter 2, while Mordecai was hanging around outside the palace, just trying to find out how she's doing, he overheard a plot. Two guys were going to assassinate the king. And if it was me and that king had just taken my adopted daughter, I would put my thing in with him. Yeah, let's kill the king and I can get Esther back. But he's a loyal guy. So he sends word through some servants to Esther, and she lets the king know there are these guys who are planning on killing you. All this is in chapter 2. And then the plot is thwarted. The guys are executed. And Mordecai is a hero, but not much happens. It comes up later in the story. We get to chapter 3. We have the introduction of another character. We already have King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes. He's just this royal, pompous, you know, guy that does what politicians do. And then we have Mordecai, this little Jewish guy. We have his beautiful daughter. She becomes king. Now, in chapter 3, the guy Haman, who becomes, you know, the anti-hero in the story, he's the antagonist, he is a guy who hates Jews, just doesn't like them. The reason is that he is an Amalekite. They call him an Agagite, but you might remember from your Bible history that Agag was the king of the Amalekites who God told Saul to destroy all of them, but he spared King Agag. Well, this guy's a descendant of King Agag, and he's always resented the Jews for killing most of his ancestors. So Haman is like really important guy in the government and real arrogant, selfish. And so when he walks out of the king's court, people there bow down to him. Mordecai's hanging out at the king's court to try to hear news about Esther, but he doesn't bow. And Mordecai's, you know, Haman's furious. How come that guy doesn't bow? A little Jewish guy. And they go, because he's Jewish. And he's like, man, I'm going to get him killed, but it's no fun just to kill him. I'm going to kill all the Jews. I'm going to do what my ancestor should have done and just wipe them off the face of the earth. So he comes up with an idea, and he's in a position to make suggestions to the king. So first of all, he picked a day. And the way he did that is by casting lots, basically rolling the dice. And he came up with a day, and then he writes up this law, and he gets the king to sign it. He tells the king, hey, there's some people out there that don't believe in following us. There's some people out there that aren't loyal to you. So how about we pick a holiday when it's open season to kill these people? He didn't tell them they were Jews, these people, these bad people. Let's have a day when, you know, a few months away, where anybody can kill them. And I'll put up the money, and we'll give rewards for people for killing Jews, and they'll pay taxes off of that, which will bring money into you. Sound like a plan? And Ahasuerus says, yeah, it sounds like a win-win. Okay. So he stamps the thing with his signet ring, and now it's law. And in Persian law, once you did that, that was going to happen. That was a done deal, and even the king himself couldn't take it back. Well, Mordecai heard about it, and in chapter 4, Mordecai is in sackcloth and ashes. He's all bummed. He's like, they're going to kill all of my people. And he wasn't so concerned about dying himself, but he knew that would mean Esther would die too as soon as they found out she was a Jewess. And not only that, all their family, the entire people of Israel, right while they're trying to get things going again, this happens. And so he's mourning in sackcloth, and Esther hears about it, and she sends one of the king's messengers out to him and said, what's the problem? And they messaged back and forth, ancient texting, and they didn't actually meet and talk. And she's like, what's the matter? And he says, we're in trouble. A law was passed, and on a day, all Jews are going to be killed. And she goes, that's a bummer. And he goes, you're a Jew. They'll find out. You'll be dead. Everyone's going to be dead. And she's going, what am I supposed to do about it? Well, you could go talk to the king. She goes, you just don't do that in this culture. I mean, I could do it. I'd have to walk in the court, look at him, and if he wants to see me, he lifts his scepter, and then I could talk to him. But if he doesn't lift his scepter, I'm dead. Mordecai goes, you're going to be dead anyway. But if you're not the one, he said, maybe you were born for such a time as this. Maybe this is your moment for greatness. If not, somebody else can save the Jews, but here's your chance to do it. And she finally made the statement, I'll do it. And it was kind of weird because she hadn't talked to the king for 30 days. She goes, he hasn't called for me, so I don't know, maybe he's over me. And Mordecai's like, no, this is your chance. This is your opportunity. And so she agrees that she will go in before the king, and she makes that great bold statement. She said, if I perish, I perish. She didn't say, oh, I know that God's going to deliver me. She goes, I'll do this, and if I die, I die. I'm going to die anyway. So in the next chapter, after Esther agrees to this, in chapter 5, she comes up with a plan. She goes in before the king. She's in his court, and he looks, and he's like, oh, yeah, I remember you. Lifts his scepter. Yeah, what's up? And she says, well, I really wanted to invite you to a banquet. I want to prepare a really nice banquet and invite Haman, your right-hand guy, to come with you. And he's like, okay, that sounds good. Tells Haman. Haman's all excited about it. So Haman goes home. You know, they end up having this feast, and she serves him a meal, and he goes, I know you want more than this. What do you want? I'll give you anything, even half the kingdom. She says, what I really want is for you guys to come back tomorrow for another feast. And he's like, you know, women, but I really prefer this to Vashti, so okay, I'll bite. Haman's like stoked because not only is he invited once, but now he's got a second invitation. He's becoming like family to the king and queen, and she's the one who wants to do it. And you know, if you're working for somebody, if their wife likes you, that's a really good thing. If your wife doesn't like you, that's really bad. So he's like, I got it. But as he's leaving the first banquet, he sees Mordecai, and he instantly, from being in a great mood, he goes into a terrible mood. He's like, that little Jew just depresses me. And he comes home, and they're like, what's the matter? He goes, well, today I had a banquet with the queen and king, and it was great. It was awesome. And I get to go tomorrow, and I was really excited until I walked out and I saw Mordecai. And I'm like, oh, I hate him. And they said, well, you could just kill him. Remember, hunting day is coming. You've got that law. But they go, tell you what would be cool? Yeah, we have a big backyard. Let's build a big gallows in our backyard, 75 feet high. We'll build it while you're having your feast. And then, you know, on hunting day, Jewish hunting day, you can get him, and we can hang him in our backyard, way up so everyone can see it. It'll be cool. We'll have the neighbors over, barbecue, do fireworks, and boom, you hang him, and this will make your day. And he's like, thanks, that cheers me up a little bit. So that night, before the banquet, the next banquet's going to be the next day, the king couldn't sleep. And so he says, I need something really boring. So come and read to me the legal records, like the congressional record kind of thing. Just come and read to me, you know, something really boring. And so they start reading to him the legal records. And one of the things that came up was the story of Mordecai when he had, you know, tipped them off and saved the king's life from those two guys that were going to kill him. And so the king goes, whatever happened to that guy? What did we give him? And they go, there's nothing here. I guess we didn't reward him. And Ahasuerus goes, well, we got to fix that today. It's becoming morning. It's early in the morning. He said, who's hanging around out in the court? In the courtyard. And it's like Haman, because this guy's total kiss up, always, you know, trying to do everything, you know, that makes him look good. He can't wait. He's got the banquet today and everything. And so they go, Haman's out there. And so he brings Haman in and he says, so what should I do for somebody that I am really pleased with? And Haman just thinks, who could he be talking about other than me? So he says, let me think here. I think you should let him wear your robe, maybe your ring. I wanted to try on your ring, and maybe crown, and sit in your best chariot, and have somebody lead that chariot all through town, crying out, this is what happens to the guy that the king's pleased with. And he's just seeing himself. Oh, cool, we'll go by my house. Everybody, I can see how the gallows thing is going. I can, you know, and everybody's going to know, wow. So the king goes, that's a great idea. There's a little Jewish guy outside, Mordecai. You do it for him. You lead the chariot and you make the announcements. Oh, his heart just sank. It's like, this is awful. And so, but he has to do it. The king told him to. So now his day is ruined as he's out all day pulling Mordecai around. And you know, Mordecai is just like looking at him going, this is really nice. I like this. Can you bow to me again? That was really... And so, you know, he does it, but he's just like, oh, this is the lowest point of my life. So he goes home for a little encouragement and probably to change for the banquet that night. And his wife goes, what's wrong with you? He goes, you're not going to believe it. That guy I hate? She goes, yeah, the little Jewish guy? Yeah. The king just made me pull him around in a chariot. He's wearing the king's robe, ring, crown. And I'm having to yell, this is a guy that the king's pleased with. And his wife goes, oh man, you're in trouble. That's the guy? The king's pleased with him? You're a dead man. And his kids are all going, yeah, you're a dead man. And it's like, wait, you guys were the ones that told me to build the gallows. You've been whipping me up. They're like, no. We want nothing to do with this. So he's just so depressed. And then a knock on the door. Hey, I'm here to pick you up for the banquet tonight. And he's just like, oh, man. And he's hanging his head, and he walks into the banquet, and it's really nice, and everybody's friendly, and they sit down, and they're eating. And then the king says to Esther, so now you got to tell me, what do you want? If you want half the kingdom, I'll give it to you. Anything you want. This is a great meal. And she goes, well, yeah, there's just one thing. She said, there's somebody who is trying to kill me and all my relatives, all of my family, all of my people, the whole nation I'm from. They want to exterminate us from the face of the earth. And Haman's like, boy, that's terrible. And then she goes, and you know what? If they were just going to make us all slaves, I wouldn't have even bothered you with this. But they want to kill us. And the king's just furious. He's like, what? Somebody's going to kill you, my wife, your relatives? No way. Who is it? And she goes, funny you should ask. It's him. It's that wicked Haman right here. And the king is like so mad. He goes, what? And he gets up and he stomps out. And so Haman comes and he's like, I'm so sorry. And he's crying and he's weeping and he's hanging on to her. He falls at her feet and then he's like hanging onto her legs and stuff. And then the king comes back in. He's like, what are you doing? I mean, first you want to kill my wife. Now you're attacking her and you know, wanting to have your way with her. Ugh. And he goes, I don't even want to see your face again. So he takes a bag and he sticks it over his head. And then he goes, kill him. And then one of his servants goes, and they all liked Esther. So they go, King, I have a suggestion. I notice there's a brand new gallows over there in Haman's backyard. What do you think? Should we use it? And he's like, awesome. Do it.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolf is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Stories series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475 And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands. And